On this first day of January, I'm going to use the text, a poem, as the text of my sermon message. It's a poem that Janus-like looks both backward upon what is now behind us in the old year and in the past, and then also looks forward to what we can take with us into the new year and into the future. The poem comes from the hand of the poet Denise Levertov. Her years are 1923 to 1997. And she was a poet who grew up in England, but spent most of her time in the United States. Her last years, actually, her last 8 years were in Seattle. She lived near Seward Park on Lake Washington with a view of her beloved Mount Rainier. She's actually buried at the Lakeview Cemetery in Seattle. The poem is titled Once Only, and as I read it, I'm going to read it through twice. Poems often are helpful to hear more than once, but you can follow along. The words are on the screen. They're also in your order of service if you want to look later in the service as I walk through the poem. Once Only by Denise Levertov. All which, because it was flame and song and granted us joy, we thought we'd do, be, revisit, turns out to have been what it was that once only. Every invitation did not begin a series, a buildup. The marvelous did happen in our lives. Our stories are not drab with its absence. But don't expect to return for more. Whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. Try to acknowledge the next song in its halo body of flames as utterly present as now or never. And again. All which, because it was flame and song and granted us joy, we thought we'd do, be, revisit. Turns out to have been what it was that once only. Every invitation did not begin a series of buildup. The marvelous did happen in our lives. Our stories are not drab with its absence, but don't expect to return for more. Whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. Try to acknowledge the next song in its halo body of flames as utterly present as now or never. In this poem, Denise Levertov seems to me to have perfectly hunted down in words a common human misconception that undermines our well-being and happiness. The experience the poet is talking about in this poem are very positive experiences, marvelous experiences, as she says, experiences that have delighted us, surprised us, moved us, lifted us, illuminated us, and filled us with joy and beatitude. Ironically, however, the way we take in those experiences and the expectations we develop around them thwart us and block us from having those experiences again. Our tendency, says the poet, is to believe that a very positive and beautiful experience in our lives is now a base from which similar or even more glorious experiences will arise. We tend to take these positive experiences as the first in a series that will continue upward and onward, or if not always upward and onward, at least an experience or a state of being that we can return to, have again, or revisit. And here, says the poet, is where the problem lies. Because, sorry, that is not the way life is. These marvelous experiences, these illuminations, these ecstasies, these glories, these beatitudes are what they are. They are not twice or thrice or ever again. They are, she says, once only. That is, they belong to their time and place, and they cannot be carried forward or transferred to another address. Can you think of times in your own life where everything seemed to be clicking and you had something going that was delightful, precious, and beautiful? Maybe a circle of friends, a family life, a career situation. And there seemed no reason for it to end. But it did end. Friends moved away. Separations took place. Children grew up, made their own lives. Your career path took a very different turn. Age came upon you. Illness occurred. Local, regional, national, world events took a sudden and surprising, unforeseen turn. And looking back, you see perhaps that you didn't even appreciate what you had at the time. For actually, that was the moment. It was that moment, and you thought you could live there forever. You thought you could build upon it. You thought perhaps that life would always be like that, perhaps even better. The poet uses an interesting word to describe these glorious experiences of our past. It's the word invitation. The poet doesn't deny that these experiences, that these past experiences are invitational, but what she does do is suggest that we misapprehend and misunderstand the nature of the invitation. We tend to think, as I said, that these past experiences are an invitation to try to repeat or to recapture them, to build upon them, to consider them as the beginning of a series. But just here, says the poet, is where the error lies. For it's not an invitation to repeat or to recapture the past, rather it's an invitation to see that life is always to the moment, that each moment holds its own meaning and value and miracle if and when one is open to that. So the invitation is this. If you have once experienced that life and being has flame and song, then you know that life and being is capable of being miraculous. You know that the glory is there. And our task, then, the poet says, is to try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames. What a phrase that is. Body halo of flames. I tell you, what it brings to my mind is the story from the Hebrew scriptures of Moses before the burning bush, if you know that story. Actually, I can't help but wonder if the poet Denise Levertov, her father's background was as a Hasidic Jew, I can't help but wonder whether she also maybe had in mind that story of Moses before the burning bush with that image of body halo of flames. Whether or not that's the case, in that story and in that place, what happened is that Moses saw an ordinary bush suddenly in its body halo of flames, a fire that would not go out. He beheld, in other words, the eternal flame. This is how I read the story, that is always there in everything, every day, everywhere. It is the unoriginated flame that is always burning, never diminishes, is never extinguished, an infinite flame always ablaze for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. And so the fault is not in the product. The fault, it would seem, is in our vision. The fault is in our approach to life and being. We tend to think that we have some control. We tend to think that we are the creators of the flame and song. But no, says the poet, you can't capture that flame and song. As a matter of fact, the more you seek that magic, the further it recedes from you. The more you insist on its presence, the greater grows its absence. The flame and song is there, that's true. But you can't force it. You can't force the magic. It is once only, here and now, this moment, this time, this confluence of events. And thus the invitation, I think the poet is talking about, is an invitation to the ego part of ourself to surrender, to let go, to stand back, and, like Moses, to behold the burning bush, to behold the glory. The ego does not create and it cannot control. Its role is to recognize, to acknowledge, and to praise. Its role is to let what will be, be. The poet says that whatever marvelous experiences and stories there will be, they will be unique as those past and stories and events and experiences were unique. Now, certainly the poet must be playing off a song that was popular in the time of the poet's life in the mid-1950s. The song sung by Doris Day in an Alfred Hitchcock film in 1956, a song that many of you, many of us, will remember, the song, Que Sera, Sera, whatever will be, will be. Unfortunately, maybe not unfortunately, Doris Day is not here to sing it, but Flossie, my wife, has reluctantly agreed to lead us in singing this song and she's going to invite you to join her in the chorus. The poet says, whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. And so it seems to me the poet does have faith that the future has marvels in store for us, and faith that the creative power of life and being is not dimmed or diminished. And then our task, as she says in concluding the poem, is to try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. And again, I think the poet is clearly playing off another song that was popular in the time of the poet, a number one hit single in 1960 by Elvis Presley titled, It's Now or Never. So the magic is here awaiting us if we're in a position to engage it, to behold it, to receive it, to grasp and accept it. But before we can get there, as I've indicated, we must acknowledge, says the poet, the once only nature of things. And that's one of the very hardest tasks that we have in life, the task of letting go of expectations. It's a task that I think especially shows up at this Christmas time season of the year, which is now receding from us. It has so many expectations attached to it. Naturally, I think, inevitably, you carry memories, you carry images of Christmases past and the hope of bringing those Christmases past into the Christmas present and the Christmas future. We work hard at setting the conditions just right, work like the devil to make it just so. Meanwhile, often our young children and our cats play with the boxes that the presents have come in. but to me, letting go of expectations doesn't mean that you let go or don't have traditions and rituals that you repeat. It doesn't mean that you have no form or structure to your life. It doesn't mean that you can't return to places that have been beautiful and meaningful for you. It doesn't mean that you don't see movies that you have seen before, or read books that you have read before, or listen to songs that you have enjoyed in the past. And it doesn't mean, I think, that you don't make commitments in life and keep them. What it does mean, I think, is that you make an attempt to approach these things in humility and wonder and openness, that you try, as the poet says, to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. So to be present to the present doesn't mean that you don't carry commitments with you that are related to a past life. But it does mean that you have to try to let go of expectations from the past so that you can be committed to the present. So I think the first thing that we need to do as we are greeting the new year is to say goodbye to the old year. And what we need to do is to, as it were, sacrifice the glories and beauties of the past, the expectations that they bring with them, so that the new life has a place to thrive and grow. We attempt to clear the ground. We attempt to clear space for the new year, to surrender what has been in the past for this present that is and for the future that will be. And so inwardly, we say, que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. Now, to assist us in saying goodbye to the old year, I want to invite you to participate in a little ritual that a ministerial colleague of mine, Dr. Deborah Thorne, Reverend Deborah Thorne, is something that she introduced to me when she was an intern with me in 2012 at the Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Port Townsend. And she called this a composting communion. And in this year-end ritual, what we do is we symbolically let go of products and outcomes from this past year's energy so that that energy can be made available to us in the year that is upon us. The Jungian depth psychologist Robert Johnson described or characterized sacrifice this way. He said, sacrifice is the art of drawing energy from your old life so that it can be reinvested into your new life. What Deborah Thorne wrote some years ago, as I said, she was my ministerial intern from 2012, and she's currently the minister of the First Unitarian Fellowship of Nanaimo, British Columbia. So here is what she said of this composting communion. Actually, why don't I wait until the papers are around so you can listen to what she said, but be thinking right along here as well. So Deborah Thorne said, a composting communion is a joining together of our past experiences, a time to put back into the earth our knowledge and experiences so that they may become one again with the earth through the organic, natural process of decomposing and thereby become the source of our wisdom. By doing this in fellowship as a communal experience, we are expressing our understanding of our place in the cycle of life and death and rebirth. We recognize that it is not just our bodies that return to earth to become the source and energy for new life, but also our experiences, all our experiences. She continues, we humans have our own cycles of growth and flourishing and our times of fallow and resting. In this turning of the year, we now recognize that we need, like the earth, to put back what we have accumulated in experience, our joys and sorrows, the highs and lows from the past year. We return to the earth what we have learned, struggled with, triumphed over, and celebrated in this past year. In this giving back, we know that through the organic processes of life, our past experiences will transform into the nourishment, the wisdom, and the inspiration for our new year.